So in this last session, we'd like to talk a little bit about halakha, and I guess this requires a bit of an introduction insofar as there's something a little bit funny about talking about religious Zionism and halakha. Many people just say halakha is halakha, so why create this hybrid? So kodem kol, I just want to introduce in our panel now. This is Rabbi Ronen Neuwirth on the far end, who is the Rav of Beit Knesset Ohel Ari in Ranana, and he is the Overseas Department Director of the Tzohar Rabbinical Organization. Oh, that's already passed. Now he is Director of Beit Hillel. He's Director of Beit Hillel. Please give Rabbi Neuwirth a hand. So as I said, if you think about this hybrid religious Zionism and halakha, it doesn't immediately spring to mind why there should be an extra category for religious Zionism. You could a person could say, theoretically, I open up the four sections of Shulchan Aruch, and I know what the halakha is. Why do I need to add something extra to it? And I guess that really forms the basis of my first question, which is really to talk about whether you think that there is actually an agenda that is specific to religious Zionism in the area of halakha. We'll start with you, Rabbi Neuwirth.
There's a mic right to your right. Okay, first, Yisha Koch for organizing this event. It's such a wonderful event. And it's my honor to be one of the participants. Anyways, the question you're asking, I think it's a fundamental question about understanding the world of halacha. Maybe I'll start with, there's a very interesting Torah of Reb Tzadok, and he says the following. He says that in the end of the day, each Talmid Chacham, each rabbi is giving the psak according to the way he perceives the world. He says that it's like in medicine. For each, there can be the very same disease, but each patient will need to have a different prescription because of his body conditions, history, whatever. Halacha gives spiritual solutions for reality. And therefore, there are different people with different needs, with different inclinations, and one halacha that fits to one person will not fit to the other person. And each Rav is giving the psak based on his perception about life, based on this ashkafa. You cannot detach and disconnect the Ashkafa from a Psak. And especially if you're talking about something so fundamental. Today, I was in the end of the previous panel, one of the students asked about Geula, what are the implications of Geula, of redemption on our times. There's a major factor to how we perceive the state of Israel. Do we perceive the state of Israel as a Jewish state, as the beginning of the redemption, and therefore we need to see the biggest picture, or do we see just our community? I can give you one example. I can give you plenty of examples. Let's take one example of the Shemitah year. If my perspective is a perspective of a Jewish state, so my major interest, if I'm looking to be more strict to look for the chumrot, is to see the global picture of the entire country. About to make sure that all the farmers can sustain the economy of the year, and that people from even Chiloni people will not eat things which are non-kosher. If my only interest is my own plate and my own community, I might prefer buying product from Arabs, which will not have any chashash, any sfek, any sort of a problem, rather than providing sustenance to Israeli Jewish farmers. So there's a major difference to the way I'm perceiving the state of Israel in my Ashkafa. It applies to other issues like army, like hospital systems, entire system of the country. If this is part of my considerations, It's a whole different picture. That's A. B, it's also a social issue. We know it's a fact, which it's not only for the state of Israel, but specifically here, that we have split the society. We have dateim, we have the secular society, we have Haredim. And in order to maintain a state as opposed to a community, if you live abroad, you can have a community. You can decide what is your what is the direction of your community, whether it's modern Orthodox, ultra Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, whatever. And this is your community, and you have the responsibility to develop the vision for your community, to enhance the community. If you are talking about the state, a country, and you believe in the country, the responsibility cannot be just your shul, just your community. You need to see the bigger picture. Sometimes you also need to make a sacrifice for that. But this must be halachic consideration. Okay, can give you an example. You mentioned Beit Hillel. One of the things we do in Beit Hillel, we have a Beit Midrash. Just giving psakim, we'll speak about, I'm sure, about psakim, ways of psika later on. But the first psak that we published about a month ago dealt with the halachot of kashrut when you're being hosted by a non-kashrut observant person. Now, the introduction to the psak was the following. We decided to adopt some leniencies, not too many, but some leniencies that appear in halacha. In order, because the introduction said the following, we believe that the unity of the Israeli society is a value. It's a crucial value. It's a Jewish value. And therefore, in order to strengthen the unity, we need to encourage people, the tea people, to forge to form a friendship relationship with non-religious people in working places, neighbors, and so on and so forth. And in order to have a strong, real friendship, you need to sometimes invite people and host them, but it has to be mutual. They need to feel comfortable enough to invite you. And because of that, we encourage people to be invited to non-religious people homes, and therefore we give you some guidelines. Now, there was a group of rabbanim that completely disagreed and bashed our psak. By the way, not because of the content, because there wasn't anything they could disprove. Everything was based on Tshuvot of Rav Moshe and other Tshuvot, but because of the approach, because they said, we don't see this as a value, as a halachic value. So again, something that in the end of the day will dictate the direction or the path that you follow within the halacha, because within the halacha this broad path will be your hashkafa, and especially if you believe in the state of Israel in religious Zionism.
So you're pointing out that a religious Zionist attitude to halacha would also be informed by the sorts of values that are in religious Zionism, and therefore would assign specific value to certain things that perhaps other groups wouldn't assign value to, certainly on the national level, and so on. I'm wondering, Reb Shurlo, if you were to name, say, two or three things that you think are really on the agenda, halachically now, for religious Zionism that you think are sort of the cutting edge of what needs to be dealt with, in no particular order, what might you say?
Everything. Really everything. I want to be more extreme than Rav Ronen. If I should look for an instrument that will symbolize the Zionist religious movement, I will use, when I learned piano for many years, I used the metronome. Yeah, and I'll say it in Hebrew because it will be much better. Tzionut datit. Yeshivat Hesder, Hakibutz Hadati, Dati Lumi, Mamlachti Dati, Universita Datit, Torah Vavoda, Miflaga Datit, Lumit, whatever. Okay? That means that Zionist religious is not identified only by the approach towards the Zionist movement. It's a completely different lifestyle of Jewish life in any aspect. Any aspect. For instance, even in Hilchot Tarat HaMishpacha, is it important to have the value, not only the value, I'll call it the halacha value, of relationship between you and your wife. It's changing all kinds of rabbis' decisions in Tarat HaMishpacha. In some terms, it's lechumra, in some terms, it's lekula. I'm not talking... the fact that will the rabbi consider the fact that שלא תהיה אסורה עליו, is it a factor in what the weight, what's the weight you're giving, or romantic life, for instance, everything, every part of the Shulchan Aruch, in Choshen Mishpat, in Eben HaEzer, in Hilchot Tfila, it's also the difference, because we have, for instance, are you permitted to להתפלל עם מכנסיים קצרות? Now, if you are living in Bnei Brak, the answer is no. Even in my yeshiva, the answer will be no. But if you are in Kibbutz Tirat Zvi, so the answer will be completely different. Yeah? And everything will be affected by this fact. To read a book, is it Bitul Torah or something important? That has so many consequences. And it's a domino effect about everything you do in life. So therefore, claiming that there is no halacha that you can paint with the color of Zionist religious halacha, look on us, sitting men and women together, is not part of our halachic approach. So therefore, there are, now, why is the difference? Rav Ronen was completely right. He said, halacha is not only not the sources or the tradition. Halacha includes values. Every halacha includes values. Every halacha includes analyzing the situation. Because if you analyze it in this way, so the halacha will be in this direction. And if you analyze that in a different way, so the halacha will be different. Halacha includes all kinds of other aspects. So therefore, I think that in any measure, for instance, I'll demonstrate this fact in a different way. I think that since Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, passed away, before that, when the Zionist religious movement had a very difficult halacha question, we would have gone to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach or to maybe the Tzitzi Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg. Yeah. Since he passed away 10 years ago, something like that, actually the Zionist religious movement is not appealing, is not meeting even the Gdolei Torah of the Haredim in any aspect. I work, I'm first of all a Rosh Yeshiva, that's what I do 24 hours a day. But in the 25th and the 26th, I'm working in ethics for the government and in other fields. And it's dinei nefashot mamesh, really dinei nefashot, making decisions, life and death. But I don't consulate with Haredim Rabbanim anymore. I did, but now I have I'll ask Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, I'll ask Rav Yaakov Ariel, I'll ask my rabbis. I mean, and it's not because I want my rabbis. It's because even in death and life, brain death, recognition in brain death is a completely different halacha. I'm talking about death and life between Haredi halacha and Zionist religious halacha, and it's brain death and it's organ donations. Everything is reflected.
I guess I would ask, why did you consult then? Is it because not now, have you gained more confidence in your own community's halakhic psak abilities?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. What would you say if you thought about this sort of hybrid religious Zionism and halakha? Is there a hybrid, first of all? Is there something specific or unique about the vantage point that this community brings to this topic? If not, why not?
Well, the first thing is, I think we've only been presented with one side of the coin here, and that is the idea of halachic decisions, either for integrating the religious Zionists with the secular community, or dvarim shomdim berumo shel olam, and maybe that speaks to the fact that the Haredi world has not yet produced the kinds of halachic decisors like Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I mean, we're still citing the Igrot Moshe over and over and over because there's nobody on that level yet, but maybe we'll get there. And so you feel more comfortable asking your own. But the way I imagine this topic is that there's another side to this, and that is, and it's something that the religious Zionist community has to address with a lot of vigor, I believe, and that is the competing with the Haredim in terms of setting the standards of orthodoxy, in terms of setting the standards of halacha. And to simply say, okay, we're just going to split from them is really not the solution. You know, I think that whereas when it comes to politics, Bennett has it exactly right. The fact that, you know, we're religious is not that, that doesn't mean we're going to address religious issues primarily. When it comes to halacha, I think you have to flip that around, and we have to address religious issues primarily, because that's what halacha primarily addresses. So, for example, kashrut. I mean, you know, why do we allow, if the Rabbanut is going to once again be controlled by the religious Zionists, why do we allow the term badat to be on there? It should say this is a private hashgacha, where the person is, for example, this is a private hashgacha, this is the rabbi, and he pays, it's a money-making, it's a business. Whereas opposed to hashgacha from the Rabbanut, it should say something that this is there's no personal interest here. The mashgiach, the rabbi, will make the same money whether, you know, he does a good job or not. In other words, the idea is that we have to start delegitimating what the Haredim do, so which is exactly what they've done to us, so that the standard can be reconfigured, and it will be we who are setting the standard, or not, and not them. And if I could just make one more point. I mean, the Haredi argument against Shivyon Benetel, okay, earlier I said what I believe to be their real motivation, but the idea that they're studying Torah, I mean, you know, this should be seen as a tremendous insult to the religious Zionist community. They're studying Torah and we're not. You can study Torah and, you know, contribute to the society. We shouldn't allow it. And if they're studying Torah so much better than us, where's the evidence for that? Where are their halachic decisors? Where are their big Rashi Yeshiva? Where are the men giving shiurim where thousands of people come to listen? Where's their product? And I think we have to be much more vigilant and much more on the offensive about this.
What will be the outcome of that? I mean, in other words, conflict ensues, essentially, from this sort of assertion of vigilance. So I'm not exactly clear.
Well, in other words, it cannot be the case that, for example, it cannot be the case where, I'm expected to eat in your home because you use badat hashgachas, but it's understood that you're not going to eat in my home. It cannot be. It has to. We have to reverse that idea, as Rabbi Shurlo noted before. We have to reverse the idea that we are the standard, and if you don't meet our standard, then you know you got to struggle a little bit more.
So, just to clarify, some of the issues that you raised that could be religious Zionist halachic issues would include everything, but things dealing that are land based also. Values that inform your worldview in areas as disparate as Torah HaMishpacha to medical, biomedical ethics, and so on. One that came up recently that is interesting and I'd like you to comment on is this issue of certain issues in the army with evacuating settlements and so on that, you know, caused a big fuss when Naftali Bennett said it on television. I'm not so interested actually in his particular remarks. I'm more interested in the larger issue. Because, Rav Neuwirth, you raised the idea that there are certain values that inform the religious Zionist community that are going to have direct influence on their halakha. This would seem to me to be exactly one of those cases, and a tricky case at that. So I'm wondering if you'd comment on what you think are actually the halakhic issues involved in such evacuation for the soldier and for the public.
I think your question maybe relates also to the previous conversation. The religious Zionism today is not one organization, one movement. And this is exactly one of the points where there's a split between the two major streams within religious Zionism today. And in a sense, again, it comes from the very same place of what is your beginning point? What is your... what is your the your viewpoint about all these issues. I want to take as an example another story of order refusal in the army that took place last year about Shirat Hashim, about women singing. Women singing in the army. If you remember,
it
took place last year. There was a group of officers that refused order because they did not want to participate in a ceremony in the army where women sang. And therefore, some Rabbanim from the Tzion HaDatit claim that this issue of Shirat Nashim in the army, it's like Yareg Uval Yavor, meaning there's no chance, under no price that one should stay and listen to women singing. By the way, I personally served 6 years in the army as Navy SEALs. I was the only Dati soldier, and with all the respect, Shirat Nashim wasn't the biggest issue I had to deal with. But that's definitely not a reason to break and explore this entire package that we built here together in 65 years of the state. Nevertheless, we met with one of the Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva, Talmid Chacham, that he supported the order refusal. He made a statement about the Yareg Uval Yavor. And we were trying to understand his approach. And he told us the following. My approach is that I see the truth in front of my eyes. And this is the only thing I see, the truth of Torah. And I know people at this stage will not realize the truth. But in the future, in 20, 30 years from today, they'll realize. We are trying to explain our approach is the approach of Hillel, Ohevet HaBriyot U'Mekarvan HaTorah. Your approach is, first of all, the people. What will the people think, where the people are, and by understanding the people, being able to enter to their penetrate to the man's mindset, and understanding the values, only from there you speak and you give your halacha. The question is whether your fixed point is like Shammai, says, Aseh Torah Keva, the fixed point of Shammai is the Torah. He sees the truth, and I don't care about what people think, what people say. These two different approaches, in a sense, are again splitting also the Tzioni camp today. If our approach and our Ashkafa, that the unity of the society, of the army, that's a supreme value, if that is the case, I would rather be there in this performance and find halakhic solutions, regardless of what is my halakhic stand about Shirat Nashim, to enable every soldier to be there. By the way, there's in the army there's pakal kisim. You have earplugs in, and you can just put the earplugs, cover your eyes with sunglasses, and there shouldn't be any problem with Shirat Nashim. But again, the question is, what are you trying to achieve? Do you want to be part of the army? Do you want to integrate because you believe in the unity of the society, or do you want to stand on a principle and to do dafka because you want to teach them a lesson? Again, it comes from a different point of view, and the same principle applies to the question that you ask about evacuation. The question is, what do I see in front of my eyes? Do I see the unity of the Israeli society and the army? And I believe that this is the source of strength of the army, that it's Tzva Haganah Yisrael. We don't want to go back to the days of the Independence War before the Independence War, that we had different forces. We have Tzva Haganah Yisrael, it's a united army. And this is a source of our strength. And if this is our outlook and our Ashkafa, definitely my Ashkafa. Therefore, this is a priority, even in a price that we need to evacuate settlements. If your supreme value is the land of Israel, and that's the highest value, more than the value of unity. So therefore, in that sense, your psak will be otherwise, because religious Zionism believe in these two values. The Israeli society, the unity of the society, the state, and Eretz Israel. So we have different opinions. Some prefer values of Eretz Yisrael, and for them it's the highest value. We have, and there's many others that they prefer the unity of the army. They believe this value is more crucial for the Israeli society, and this is definitely my point of view.
So, Dafka, that situation creates a conflict of values within the Dati Lumi community, precisely because both values are high values, and now you have, it's not like one above the other, talking about unity on the one hand, sanctity of the land on the other hand, or sanctity of settlement. That makes it a difficult proposition. It sounds to me from what you're all saying that actually it's not just, it's almost mukhrach that there should be a different attitude to halakha. Because once you're saying that your values are very specific in that sense, then you would have to approach halakha differently. In other words, it's almost a contradiction to say that you'd be a religious Zionist and not actually think in new ways about halakha. Would you say that is accurate?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. But now I want to say about the other side of the coin in two aspects. One is it's not only ideology or rabbinical or paskin or whatever. It also depends if the Zionist religious society is committed to the halakha. Doesn't matter. I'm not talking about what halakha. Let's speak about the Zionist religious halakha. I think that one of the problems that we have, and this is a reason why we feel sometimes in a lower stage than the Haredi movement, is because part of us really are not committed to the halakha in the way they think the halakha says. I mean, I'm not talking about what halakha, and that's one of the problems. I mean, we don't have only to confront the Haredi movement or the Haredi rabbis that they are wrong, that they are not considering the real values or whatever, but we have also to invent a lot of work and a lot of attention to our society promoting and enhancing and escalating their commitments and the observing of halacha.
Why is that so? In other words, why is the community not...
I can give many reasons, but I'll go back to what I said before. Once you have two worlds that you are connected to, you sometimes feel that you're not committed to both sides. You are looking for a kind of, like we say, mizrachnik, you know, a compromised gray color. And I think that one of the very important things for us is to be much more committed and not much more observing of halacha. I'm not talking about any kind, and talking about the kind of halacha. That's one thing, talking about halacha. The second thing is that, Rabbi, I want only to emphasize one point that Rabbi Ronan said, and that is the fact that there is a discussion inside the Zionist religious movement between different rabbis, and machloket is part of the, you know, it's part of the pillars of halacha. But saying some, he said that way, some of the rabbis are emphasizing or giving a lot of value or a lot of weight to mitzvah yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and some of them are giving to the unification of the army. Two of those aspects are not being considered so important in the Haredi discussion. So that's something that is very typical, and I think it demonstrates exactly what we said. Because it can be a discussion, what is the halacha? But the fact that both sides in the Zionist religious movement are using factors that in the Haredi discussions will not take big place, not mitzvat yishuv Eretz Yisrael and not a unification of the army, that demonstrates my claim that everywhere you'll find the influence of the Zionist religious halacha.
Can I just disagree with Rav Shurlo for 1 minute? I mean, yes, it's very nice to say that in the religious Zionist community there are a lot of religious Zionists who don't really hold up maintain true standards of religion. True, but I think this sort of gets at the point that I wanted to make before. In the Haredi community, you have the same number, probably it's for sure equal, but the difference is they deny it. They said, we're not interested. We're holy. We do everything right. Their sins, they never accumulate in their own minds. And in terms of how I imagine this panel, in terms of the need to compete for religious authority, not with the secular. We're not competing with them for religious authority. We're competing with them for political authority. But with the religious non-Zionists, with the Haredim, we have to play by that same standard. It doesn't matter if some of our people are not religious. We don't accept that. They're wrong, and we're moving on. But our standard is first.
Can I respond? The truth is that I'm not really motivated of having a big fight with the Haredim. Let them do whatever they want, and I'm more concentrating in our society. But in one aspect, I do agree with you, and I want to echo that. And that is one of the parts of the argument is who represents the halacha towards the secular society. Because if the Haredi movement is representing halacha towards the secular society or towards the entire Jewry all over the world, I'm really concerned. I think that this is one of the reasons of disconnecting with halacha. And when you're talking abroad and even today in Israel, I feel that it's connected also to assimilation. I mean, you don't want to identify yourself with this kind of religion. And so therefore, it's really very important, not because we are competing with the Haredim and who will be, you know, I'll leave to the Kadosh Baruch Hu to judge. But looking on the ground, I think it's very important that the Zionist religious halacha will be at least considered or capable to be representative and ambassadors of the halacha towards the entire Jewry.
Just fusing some of the things that you've been talking about, there are complaints that you hear sometimes that religious Zionism has become more and more, for lack of a better term, Haredi-ized in the last number of years. Do you think that's a legitimate critique?
What's the question?
In other words, they're complaining that it shifted more to the right under the influence of Haredi, and that even that actually the influence is actually happening one way, and go ahead.
Okay. First of all, you don't have to ask us. You have to ask someone that will make a survey and check. I don't know. First of all, what's the reality? But I feel that the right description is that the range became much, much, much wider. I mean, there are groups that became more right wing. I think it's the minority, and there are groups that went way to the left, and when I'm talking about right and left, I'm talking Americans' terms, not Israeli terms. It went very far to the left. So first of all, the range is much more. But there is one thing that everybody should know, and that is that most of the educators come from the right wing for many reasons. One of the reasons is because I'll say two reasons. First is they're very motivated. And the second thing is that when you're in the right thing, actually it's the only option you have in order to make your living. Our students that hear from us that you can go to the university, that you can do other things and all, so therefore only some of them are going into education. So therefore the education system today in Israel is not balanced. I mean, let's say Haredi-colored Zionist religious educators are rabbis, are teachers, are really, and I admire them, the fact that they have this motivation, and to be a teacher in Israel or educator in Israel is not a big groyse glick, as you say in Arabic. You know, the salaries are not so good as in other issues. So therefore, this has a lot of influence.
Isn't that true around the world? You see that in the United States as well, right? You have this paradox where modern Orthodox parents who complain about Haredim teaching their children, but God forbid they would want their children to become an educator. So it's kind of a vicious circle. You end up bemoaning the thing that you've encouraged, right? So,
Can I make just a point?
Sure.
I think that the religious community has grown tremendously over the last 40 years, that, you know, it's understandable that there's going to be more on the it'll be much much broader horizons. And I also think that, you know, the religious Zionist, or what in America you call the modern Orthodox community, has grown tremendously, and the Haredi community has grown tremendously. I mean, when I was growing up, the religious community was so small that even though, you know, there were differences between the right and the left, you know, there were those who followed Rabbi Soloveitchik and those who were devotees of Rabbi Aaron Cutler, they got along much better because they had, not that they had more in common than today, they needed each other. So it's a little bit unfair to say that you know, there's been this slippage to the left or slippage to the right. It's a consequence of the tremendous growth of the religious community, and I think the Haredim have learned how to harness that growth, and the religious Zionists and the modern Orthodox have not. And here it's not happening, but in the United States, in the better yeshivot, they pay nice salaries today precisely for that reason. They don't want to bring Haredim in to teach their children. They're ready to pay, you know, a living wage. Okay, not what you're going to make as a major league pitcher or an investment banker, but, you know, certainly more than a public school teacher.
I want to elaborate on the two things that Rav Shelo mentioned before. First of all, the reflection of what Rav Shelo said, I think is it's very accurate. If I'm trying to give numbers according to statistics, according to surveys, today about 30, something between 25-30% of the Tzionic community is what we would define in the spectrum of the right wing, and the mainstream. I think the majority is mainstream, like 60-65% are representing the mainstream, maybe 5-10% the left wing, but within the rabbis and the educators, the majority comes from the more right wing Ashkafa, the Chadal. That's it's an accurate reflection. Now I think that one of the most challenging things we have in our time is, in many other areas, is the postmodern world, the postmodern values. If in the past, the system of halacha was very simple, you had the gedolim, you had always the rabbi Nikila, but the gedolim, they had the authority and the mandate to give the solutions in most of the difficult cases, like you mentioned before, of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, of Moshe Feinstein, and obviously before them. There was always a generation gap between the Gedolim and the people, but it was always bridgeable. Something very interesting, fascinating, challenging is happening in our times. The the pace of the changes in the society is so rapid that the language today is completely different. I'll tell you a story. I was lecturing in a conference a few months ago, and I brought my daughter with me to help me out. She's 16. So obviously all the sessions were boring, so she was outside. And I was about to speak about all the changes and the fact that today we need rabbis to understand the language of the Facebook and Twitter and so on and so forth. So I was texting her a message to check in if she's okay. So she writes me back, Abba kol beseder, ani bapele, mesacheket bapais. I couldn't understand the message. I called and said, I'm fine. Ani bapele, so I realized that pele is probably the telephone, the cell phone. And mesacheket bapais, what is playing with the pie? I know about mifal hapais. So she writes back, she tells me, Abba, it's Facebook. What happened to you? Don't you understand our language? We have such a different language today. Every 5 years, there's a different culture. And the Gedolim, they have a tremendous Torah, but this Torah is completely missing out on the society today. People don't get this language, people don't get these values, and the halacha is losing its relevancy to the people. And I think there must be something that is done. It's our responsibility of Rabbanim, maybe from the younger generation. I think Rav Shelo is the pioneer in this area. Realize that in order to save the halacha, the Jewish halacha, we need to read the surface. We need to understand what is happening in the world today, because the goal of the halacha is not for the minority of the Tzibur, the Haredim, or the Tzioni that are very observant. The goal of halacha is to preserve the future of the Jewish nation. And therefore, we must, within the tools of the Orthodox halacha, and in the toolbox we have so many things we can use, it's our obligation and responsibility to be pasking halacha, to give courageous psakim, and to restore the relevancy of the halacha to the people. Because today there's a spiritual renaissance, especially in the Torah world, especially here in Israel, in Israeli society. People want to learn more about Judaism, about tradition. And instead of building bridges, we are building taller walls. And it's our obligation and responsibility. If we don't want to miss out the moment, as Rav Soloveitchik says in Kol Dodi Dofek, we must realize this is Tzav HaShah. This is the necessity for our times, to be courageous, to give a courageous psakim within the tools of the Orthodox halacha. And again, I think we have the best example here of Rav Sherlo, who's the pioneer in this area, and I'm one of his students, and I think this is a responsibility, a major responsibility for our times.
So I'm just going to throw it open to the floor once again for the last time, if there are questions from the floor.
My name is Simcha. I'm from Ramat Beit Shemesh up here. I just wanted to ask the rabbis, in this week's parasha, we talk about the Milyaldot that they gave birth to. They let the children of Israel be born, even though there was an edict from Pharaoh to kill the Jewish children. Now, today we could say that maybe similar, not the same thing, but what does the halacha have to say for if a woman wants to give an abortion, stam, not because the kid's sick or anything like that, just because she feels like it, and what does the Torah have to say about that?
Why is it a question related to this? The answer is no, okay? First of all, but I think for asking if someone is, if a woman is permitted to make an abortion, stam kach. Okay, that's much more difficult. I can't answer it in a minute. I'll say, yeah, it's worse than that. It's worse. The situation today, that the worst job that you can get that is confronting halacha is to be a religious doctor in the hospital. That's more than an officer in the army, more than a businessman. That's the most problematic issue today in Israel. I don't want to answer this question, you know, very. The answer is, if I should give an answer to this typical or specific question, the answer is much more easy. And because, according to the law and even according to ethical rules, you cannot force a doctor to do something that is against his conscience. So therefore, in this case, he should say, no, I'm not doing that, okay? But that's easy, okay? That's easy. The conflict between a religious doctor and the hospital, only michtav shichur on Shabbos, you know, it's not only Shabbos. It's all kinds of issues. It's so complicated. I don't want to give an answer, you know, in a minute answer in a panel, and I'm apologizing. Someone has to work today, so I'm soon have to go to back to the yeshiva, okay? So I'm apologizing in advance.
Jeremy again. Rabbi Berkowitz, you were talking before how as the Dati Tzioni community, we have a moral right and an obligation to show that our standard is what the standard of religion in Israel should be and to compete with the Haredim. But if that's our obligation, couldn't other movements, and especially in Chutz La'aretz, say they have an obligation to show that modern Orthodox standards are wrong? Like, conservative rabbis should be fighting to show that their hashgachot are the standard, not Orthodox hashgachot.
Well, in theory, you're correct, but in fact, the gap between religious, between Orthodox Judaism, whether it's practiced by the Hasidim or the Lithuanian Haredim or the right wing of, you know, of the religious Zionist community or the modern Orthodox left wing. I mean, assuming that all of these people maintain a halachic standard of some sort, the gap between that and the reform movements, whether they're in their reform or conservative dress, because if you know the history, you know the word conservative is really, we should be the conservatives because we want to conserve all of our traditions. The conservative movement broke away from the reform movement in Germany, and so because, and they took the name conservative because they said that Geiger, Frankl said that Geiger went too far, and he was doing away with too much of the heritage and tradition, so they want to conserve something. So they're really, okay, on the level of the narrative in America, the conservative movement, basically the rabbis came from the Orthodox. But fundamentally, they're the same. All the psukim of the Igrot Moshe on the reform and conservative, whether their marriages are marriages, kiddushin, they're getting or not getting, all that, it's always one. Their synagogues are the same. They're always one. And the gap between the conservative and the reform on the one hand and the Orthodox on the other is so vast. I mean, we really don't have, in halachic terms, a safa mishutefet. Yes, we have a safa mishutefet in political and sociological and other matters, even communal matters. But when it comes to halacha, we're just not in the same. Reform doesn't accept halacha at all, and conservative, you know, the halacha is made up as you go along. It's not really beyond the theoretical level. It's nothing to worry about.
My name is Bruce. I'm from Efrat. I wanted to get back to the question regarding questions of conscience in the army with orders. I can't imagine that there's no order that you wouldn't decide that you just can't do. There must be some order by it. And so the question is not whether you would or not. The question is, where is that line? So you hear things that, you know, on the left-wing side that they wouldn't knock down any Arab homes. That's immoral. But Jewish homes, that's okay. So I wanted to know the perspective. What order would it take for you not to follow? And why isn't this a benchmark? This is a big issue in the question of Israel. The religious Zionist community should take the role in defending the rights of Jews.
I think that we are making a mistake starting to argue about doing the orders, observing the orders, or refusing. The question is really, does the government have the right to decide where are the borders of Israel? That's the question. The question is not the army. If your answer to this question, that the government is doing something illegal by saying that we should withdraw, so therefore, if you think it's illegal according to halacha, therefore you are not permitted to refuse. You are forced to refuse. This is the question. The question is not the army. And I think we're doing the same mistake. Now, in this argue, if the soldier or the officer should refuse or shouldn't refuse. The question is the following. If according to halacha, a government, according to mitzvah, according to what do you think, a government is authorized to decide where the borders and make a withdrawal, so therefore no soldier can refuse. And if you think the government cannot make such a decision, so it's a war crime to do that. So I can't understand why the conversation is dealing with the soldier. It's actually your opinion about, do you think that the government is permitted to make those decisions? Yeah, moral, no. First of all, definitely, but it's not in this case. I hope there's no soldier in the world that says that he should not refuse to any order that he gets. I think, hopefully, there's no soldier. This is not the real argue. This is not the real conversation. Every soldier in the world, and especially when he has his conscience, and he should refuse when he gets an order that is against Again, I'm not sure that everyone with his personal conscience, it's much more complicated. But I'm saying, dealing with Hitnatkut or dealing with Chas V'Shalom in the future, we are, again, I think, doing the same mistake. We are arguing that the wrong conversation. The conversation is that the do you think that according to the law, to the halacha, to whatever, a government can decide where are the borders of Israel? That's the question. If yes, yes. If not, not.
Okay, we're going to let you go now because you have to go to work. Tada rabba. We'll take a couple more questions. I think you had your hand up here in front. You still want to ask? Is there anybody, are you back there? Was that a question? Well, that was just a stretch. Okay.
Hi. I'm not sure if any of you guys share the same opinion as Rabbi Cherlau, but again, with his question, in that case, would you support perhaps a Druze unit that was responsible for the disassembly of Jewish territory that had been given away by the government, regardless of whether or not the government was halachically permitted to do so? But once it had been ruled, would you allow for a non-Jewish unit to to be the main enactors of the disassembly?
God forbid, I think it'll be a huge mistake. If this is something that the government, you know what, I'll add one more thing about that Rabbi Shlomo mentioned that I just wanted to emphasize. There's a huge difference between something general, it can be a general decision of a Rabbanim, of a movement, whether it's a right-wing movement, left-wing movement, religious Zionist movement, than a private decision. As Rabbi Shlomo mentioned correctly, each soldier has and must have the ability and the courage to refuse order if something in his eyes is immoral. Obviously, it's not so, it's more sophisticated, Rav Shlomo indicated, but no, there shouldn't be anything general that comes from either group of Rabbanim or a movement, again, whether it's right, left, can be thinkers that say that we need to refuse order, because then you're breaking the tools of democracy, of the society, of the Jewish state. And therefore, once you make a decision that for evacuating you, you have a Druze unit, it's a huge problem, because then you say, this is something not for Jews. If the Jewish government decides that you need to evacuate a territory, which I hope will never happen again, which I think it was proven that it's a mistake. But if, God forbid, it happens, then the first people to perform this this command should be Jews, should be people that carry the responsibility for the Jewish future for the Jewish land, not less than the Druze. And they should be there. They should confront. You can't do it, the Druze against the settlers. It should be Jews. Jewish soldier. They can be also Druze. Like it has to be. It must be a regular unit. Again, me as a soldier, and if you mentioned Bennett before, perhaps I've never been in that situation. Had I been there, maybe I don't know if I would have the courage to participate, and I would ask for dismissal, probably. But as a rabbi, if one of my talmidim come to me and ask me, should I refuse an order? I would tell him loud and clear, you should not refuse an order. You should not refuse the order. You should follow your conscience, but as a psak, you should not refuse an order. And I think that's a distinction between a private decision to a general public decision and using illegitimate tools to fight against the army, against the decision of the government, which I disagree with.
We'll just let.
Can I fundamentally agree with what Rav Shlomo said, but I think there's something that's being missed here. There's nobody has ever said that the government does not have the right to withdraw the army and thereby set the boundaries of the state, in this case, of the state of Israel. I think there's another way to look at all this. The government, has the right to withdraw its soldiers. But the government doesn't have the right to force me, to compel me to leave my home. if the government, if I want to stay in my home now under some different sovereignty, okay, they think that's there. There you have a much stronger case for justifying siruf pekuda, because otherwise, to say to go as Bennett said, and I think that the Rabbi Ronen said it just now, that he would ask his commanding officer to relieve him. Well, then that's no different than siruf pekuda. Because the idea is, you know, that if the government has the right to set the boundaries, which it does, okay, then obviously it withdraws, it takes its army and moves it to the new boundary. That has nothing to do with whether the government has the right to tell me that I can no longer live where they are no longer going to be sovereigns. It's not their question. I have to ask the next sovereign what they, and I make that decision, not the government.
I'm not sure I totally follow that argument. Let's say we'll use a really, really mundane example. Let's say that the government says it's not just a question of removing the army. Your argument is almost like, so we're not going to protect you, and if there's an Arab sovereignty over you, so you'll have to take your chances. Right, okay. But there's other factors involved. In other words, that you living in this space may block the larger sort of policy considerations that we want to enact. Just like if you have a house and the government wants to build a freeway there, so they're going to kick you out of their house. They're not going to say, well, I want my freeway and you're sovereign over your house. They're going to say, your house is blocking my policy, which is to build a freeway here. Now, consideration would say that I should compensate you financially, et cetera, et cetera. But they do have the right, in other words, to impinge on your personal autonomy in such a way.
Correct. And though that's called the rule of eminent domain, and that is correct. When they are the sovereigns, they have the right to do that. But now, the government of, you know, I always use this example, the People's Republic of China, right? They have no right to tell the government of the United States what to do in Lower Manhattan just because there's a majority of ethnic Chinese living there. Okay, when you're not the sovereign, you lose the right to dictate anything. So the government of Israel says they're now pulling back to the green line. That means I'm staying where I am. I can't possibly be in their way. They're forfeiting their claims to sovereignty over this territory. They have no longer any right to say, I moved from New York to Israel. If I would have moved from New York to Italy, would the government of Israel be able to dictate to me what I should do as an immigrant who left my home? No. It's only because I live under Israeli sovereignty. The minute they withdraw their claims, they withdraw their sovereignty, and they have no right to compel me to go along.
Right. I follow the argument. It almost sounds, though, it's like, take your chances. You're under foreign domain. We no longer protect you. And okay, so I think you have just one more.
My name is Itiel Oron. I teach in Yeshivat Eretz Tzvi. Just trying to take the discussion back to religious Zionist halacha. And actually, the question is addressed to Rabbi Sherlo, who left, but I will hope that he will take his place.
We'll play his role.
Thank you very much. You don't have quite a nice beard, but you'll have to. Anyway, the question is as follows. Rabbi Sherlo actually mentioned an example of a serious halachic question, a challenge that a doctor in Israel will face, and that is signing release papers on Shabbat. Now, many of the examples that were brought up before about religious Zionist halacha were pretty much similar to all kinds of halachic challenges that you have in the modern Orthodox world outside of Israel. So I would like to use Dafka, that example of signing release papers in a hospital, okay, and to ask for your opinion whether the halachic decision about that, whether this is permissible or not, will be different if the question is being asked about a hospital in Israel or a Jewish doctor in New York.
I think fundamentally different, and because of a very simple reason. In New York, when you have the majority of the workers, of the employees, of the doctors are non-Jewish, it's very simple. It's very simple to manage. There are things of Bikoch Nefesh that you can do. Most of the stuff they can do. That's one aspect. The other aspect, which again it's a question, but the answer is more simpler. When you work in Israel, the majority of the patients are Jewish, and therefore there's chilul Shabbat, Yikuach Nefesh, it's definitely a consideration. When you work in Chutz Aretz, majority are non-Jews, it's a question. Obviously, because of Berkei Shalom, we do not make any distinction, and the doctor should not make, and is not allowed to make any distinction. But again, the bottom line is it's much easier to manage a hospital in Chutz Laaretz because you have lots of non-Jews. The question is what happens in Israel? What is the ideal hospital in Israel? Is the ideal hospital is a place that you hire Jews or non-Jews that they will operate the entire system, will prepare the release? Past Shabbat we were in Netanya, we had to go to Laniado Hotel. That's a Laniado Hospital for nothing serious. It's a Haredi hospital. Everything that has slightest Chilul Shabbat is done by non-Jews. Everything from the acceptance letter through the release, even in the X-ray room, the one who presses the button, like there's a Jewish doctor, and the one who presses the button is an Arab guy. And is that the ultimate hospital that you want to see in Israel, or do you want to provide with a lot of solutions in order to enable every Jewish person who wants to be observant to serve in any role in the hospital? I think that is a whole different question. And again, you need to have a lot of courage and creativity in order to find solutions. Tzomet is providing in a technological way some of the solutions, but not enough. There's a longer way to go, as Rav Sherlo implied before, because today, the fact that the majority of the workers, the nurses, doctors are non-religious, this is what enables a hospital to run on Shabbat. But that should definitely not be the ultimate solution.
This is actually a great opportunity, first of all, for me to introduce you to the Baal Bayit of Moshav Yishi, which is Rabbi Menachem Mendelowitz. And I really want to thank him, really of Hakarat HaTov, gratitude for providing such a beautiful space. And he did an enormous amount of work on this program, so thank you very, very much. And it also gives me the opportunity to say that because it's sort of the reshoot of the Baal Bayit, that the last question goes to his son, Hillel Mendelowitz.
Hi, so I'm Hillel. I learned in the yeshiva in Maale Adumim. And there was a certain thing that you said, so throughout Rabbi Nerwith, that throughout in halacha, there's certain halachic values, that each rabbi, according to the way he sees different things, he'll paskin according to giving more emphasis on a certain halachic value. So I was just asking, you brought up a few things such as Israeli unity and personal conscience as halachic values. So when did these values become actual halachic values, like throughout in the Mishnah and the Talmud? And if they in fact didn't show up there and they're new values, so what makes you any different than the conservative movement that see modernity as a halachic value, not just as a value?
Listen, there are two things. There are the values and there's the halachic, and there's the halachic course. Rav Soloveitchik writes this in one of his essays. Once you enter the halachic course, there are specific halachic tools within your toolbox that you can use, and this is halacha. The question is, what is your initial approach? The initial approach will dictate with which tools will you be using once choosing the path and the direction of your tshuva. And this is fundamentally different than the conservative movement does not necessarily have any obligation to the rules and the principles of halacha from the past. They can say that something is irrelevant and by this give their halacha. This is something that within the Orthodox framework cannot be done. Everything you do is either based on past precedent or past principles that appear in one of our Jewish sources, in one of the Gemarot, in one of the Shutim responses. Your decision as a posek will be which path to prefer. Because almost in every dilemma, you'll have people that say this thing and people that say the other thing. Your question will be who to choose, who to select when I'm deciding about my bottom line, about the way. And you always mention if you have the integrity as a posek, you always mention also the opposite opinions.
But in the end of the day, you will say, I was machia, I determined to choose this path because of these values. And these values have more weight in my perspective. And this is orthodox halacha. This is the way it has always been. So you have tools, you have tools, you have principles, you have precedents, you utilize them. But what is the direction you're choosing? What is the path? Your values are dictating the path.
First of all, I'd like to thank all of our panelists today. Did a terrific job. And on behalf of Torah in Motion, I'm really thrilled to see that you've all come for our program, and we hope to share many programs with you, God willing, in the future. Thank you very much.